knowledge fire.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in
Stop it.
Andy in Kansas. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a Christian caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Celine, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today?
My bright spot today is that the conservation journey of the tributes to Celine
Ooh.
Continue. So far, up to this point, we have had adopted a quokka, and a baby elephant
it's
in
Kenya. It's pronounced quokka.
It is.
Yes.
And today, I'm thrilled to announce that Wooter got in touch and has protected 4 square meters of forest area in Belgium.
Yay!
in honor of Celine.
Here's what we need.
What?
Now we need to overtake Rogan, and we need to carve out part of the world for just the walks.
Hmm.
We'll survive.
I think that you're getting into unhealthy culty territory.
That's a good point.
You're going back to your roots.
That's a good point.
A little. I think it's more amusing that this is turning out to be like people are just going, taking the ball and running with it in the directions that they come up with, and some really cool conservation type ideas and supporting and what's it called? Charitability?
Yeah, something along those lines. Philanthropy?
I really think that that's cool.
I think
and
it's
so thank you so much. On behalf of my cat, Celine, she says, meow. How about
this
you?
This has taken a quick turn towards the cultish. We went to worship at the altar of Celine, and now we have adopted people.
But it's
right.
Protecting wildlife.
It's good. We're a good cult.
Yeah.
I think we're a good cult.
If the cult is just donating to preserve wildlife.
Exactly. That's a great cult.
Great.
At no point in time has anybody sacrificed anything
tenants?
To anybody.
No. So you, what's up?
My bright spot, Dan, is late in June, I think, Rory Scovel released his documentary stand-up special, mm-hmm. and it is fantastic.
Mm.
So what he did was he did 6 nights of improvised stand-up at this kind of like dilapidated / amazing, incredible, holy comedy club. And it's fantastic, not just because it's really, really funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's very funny on stage. Obviously, Scovel's really, really great.
Sure.
But because it shows him analyzing his sets afterward, like he's committing to doing an improvised hour, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And as a comic, you know, if you're doing that, there's a good chance you're going to get a 5-10 minute stretch of like, ooh, this is nothing.
Yeah.
This is nothing.
Yeah.
So there's that fear of...
He might get a 20-minute stretch.
Yeah, sure. He might get an hour stretch,
yeah.
You know? But there's that double-sided fear for him of like, I don't want to go into a joke,
mm-hmm.
but that's what comics have always trained themselves to do.
True.
You know? You're riffing for 5 minutes, the riff runs out, and you're like...
If things are going bad, the way you save yourself would be like, well, I got to pull out a joke.
Exactly. Or you know, that kind of thing. And so it was that constant fight, and then the way that he analyzed it afterwards of like, why is it getting sexual too soon? And he's like, well, because I've never done this before. It's just like when you start out as a comic,
mm-hmm.
it starts out real blue, and you know, you do nothing but dick jokes, that kind of thing.
That sounds like an interesting like sort of psychological deconstruction by way of analyzing your own stand-up sets and your own tendencies under pressure.
It is. It's really interesting. Mm. It's really good. And it's very funny.
I may have to check that out.
I would. I would recommend it. And
all
also,
right.
There's the story of the comedy club, and it's this guy. The story is amazing.
All right.
Anyways, check it out.
Once I'm done with Survivor, I'll check that out.
It's on YouTube, but we'll see you in 3 months.
All right. So, Jordan, today we have an episode from the past. We're going back to the past. I was sick of the bullshit. Here's what happened. On Friday, we will have a present-day episode, and we'll talk about fucking Mike Lindell and all this nonsense.
Oh, God.
But I kind of got to a point where I was sitting here, and I was like, all right. No matter what, if you open up an episode of Alex Jones's show, you're going to find something.
Sure.
Right? There's going to be something to talk about. But is it going to be like something bizarre? Like maybe a new species of animal?
Sure, could.
Or is it going to be a body?
Right. There's a cornucopia of possibilities.
Yes.
That is one thing that's an advantage.
And in the present day, it's always upsetting.
Anti-vax, it's going to be a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just was like, I was resistant to open up that cover and see. I found myself resisting doing it. Whereas in the past, you know, you might find a new fossil.
Yeah.
Or something. You might add to the, I don't know. I don't know if this metaphor is making any sense, but the point is I wanted to
the
put off
the point is when we go back,
day.
We might find out that you got to give it up to the Somali pirates.
Right.
That's what's there for us in the past. What's here in the present is just everybody's going to die.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So today we're going over May 30th, 2003.
Ooh.
But before we do, let's take a little moment and say hello to some new walks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, Paul E. C. Wonk. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
I hate to say it. It took me a second to get there, but I did.
Next,
thank you very much.
I, too, have been watching House reruns on Pop. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Rogue Pelican. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Rogue Pelican.
I should say, also, I believe it was season 9 is when the pelican makes its first appearance into Survivor.
Oh, is that what I thought it was talking about our pelican reference.
Oh, no. I mean, sure, there's the emotional support pelican.
Sure,
but
sure.
This was not the case on Survivor.
He was not emotionally supported.
He's a little moody.
Ah, that sounds about right.
But great. What a great pelican.
Okay.
Next, psst, want to buy a tiger? You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, definitely not the literal biblical devil. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Ooh, that's just what he would fucking say.
Sneaky.
Yeah.
Next, Catherine S. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Catherine.
And we had a technocrat in the mix, and this is my InfoWars-obsessed coworker. I started buying pills and shirts from Alex, so I'm becoming a technocrat to bring balance to the fight. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why are you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much. My info war is a plus co-worker who started buying bills and jerseys from Alex. I'm becoming a ticket to credit to Bellabrino Dale first.
Thank you very much. That was well done. That was not quite auctioneer, but it was real close.
Yeah, I started to run out of breath and fall apart there towards the end.
All right, and also for helping us out with a special project, we have a new Raptor Princess, Joanna.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
I'll barbecue your ass.
It's over for humanity.
You're a beautiful soul. They're coming for your balls. Well, I piss all over your god. Very few people crap in the pool unless they're babies. I piss all over the state.
You make it a practice of calling people pieces of garbage?
When they are.
Comet, as you see fit.
Thank you so much, Joanna.
Yes, thank you very much, Joanna.
That's the raptor.
That's the
sound
raptor.
From now on.
Yeah, I like it.
So, Jordan, this episode is an interesting little glimpse into where Alex was at the end of May in 2003. Obviously, still looking to see if he believes he's fighting the devil in 2003.
True.
Still trying to see his relationship with the Iraq war, especially this thread that we didn't expect to find where he is in denial about debathification.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I'm fascinated to see how all this plays out, and there's some interesting stuff in the mix for today. But the lead story.
What's that?
Holy shit. Bill Clinton's coming back.
Okay.
I didn't talk about a story that broke a couple days ago. Bill Clinton said he wanted to get rid of the 22nd Amendment so he can run again, but Republicans have introduced bills as well. So the princeling George W. from Kennebunkport, Maine, can run again.
For those in our audience outside the United States, the 22nd Amendment was added to the Constitution in 1947, essentially to make sure that someone could only serve 2 4-year terms as president. Prior to this, it was just kind of understood that this was the norm, with George Washington setting an unwritten precedent by not seeking a third term in office. This amendment was ratified when it was, in 1947, because the presidency of Franklin Roosevelt had just ended, who served 3 terms and had won a 4th election for the presidency but died in office. people kind of realized at that point that this norm that everyone just assumed everyone would accept was not actually a rule, and maybe we should put it on paper. We've kind of learned some more of those things lately.
It was called the Calm It Down, Roosevelt Amendment. That was the first name of it, yeah.
Since then, presidents have been bound by these term limits, although the wording of the rules has often caused some debate to pop up. For instance, conversations often happen about whether a two-term president could run for a third consecutive term if they were vice president on the third term
ticket. Sure.
Bill Clinton was speculating that it might be a good idea to allow someone who's served two consecutive terms to run again at a later date, essentially making the term limits only apply to the consecutive terms.
Sure.
He was giving a speech at the, probably not a coincidence, John F. Kennedy Library and Museum in Boston, where he speculated that given that people were living longer, quote, there may come a time when we elect a president at age 45 or 50, and then 20 years later, the country comes up against the same kind of problems the president faced before. So that's basically, you know, well, he's at the John F. Kennedy Library.
Right.
According to the article on his speech that was in the BBC, quote, the former president said such a change probably would not apply to him, but would benefit future generations. So that's what the kernel of this is.
Sure.
In 2003, Representative Serrano introduced House Joint Resolution 11, which was aimed at repealing term limits for the presidency. He did this literally every other January from 1997 to 2013, and every bill died in committee.
Oh, yeah.
Between these years of 1995 and 2005, Representative Steny Hoyer also introduced bills to repeal the 22nd Amendment, and both of these dudes did this regardless of which party held the presidency. So when Alex is saying that, like, people are doing this in order to get their guy more terms,
right,
like, no, they're doing it because they don't believe there should be term limits for right. the presidency.
Right.
It's kind of, they're doing it even if it does bite them in the ass.
Yeah.
Reagan gets a third term.
It's just what they do.
Yeah. So the prospect of a leader unilaterally declaring that they want established term limits to not apply to them, that's something that should maybe be seen as a warning sign. But for Alex to report this news without the appropriate context, I think this is a bit of lying by omission.
Yeah, especially when we live in the present and you just heard everybody being like, I don't think there's anything wrong with Trump getting a third term. He didn't even get a full one his first term. And you're like, I don't even, whatever, that, yeah.
Yeah, sure. A lot of shirts going around with various dates for Trump to be in presidency forever.
Yeah, and also that argument from Clinton is really, really stupid. Really stupid, because if you're saying to me that 20 years after a president, we find ourselves in the same problems.
Yep.
That president was a shitty president then.
Maybe. Or maybe there are problems that you can deal with, but you can't deal with permanently.
Sure.
That is possible that things could recur. I would say in relation to Clinton's argument that if it were the case that a president was particularly good at dealing with something, and then 20 years later, the same issue popped up.
Sure.
There's a really good chance we would have studied their response to the issue.
Probably.
And maybe somebody else could implement a lot of the same things. You wouldn't need the exact same person to deal with it. It's not like they have a magical individual power.
Only Solon can help us now!
Right.
Yeah.
It's maybe not the most compelling argument. Although I do see that some people, you know, who are opposed to term limits don't have the worst ideas ever.
Sure.
I think there's valid arguments to be made for and against.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I mean, I think what's funny about saying it at the Kennedy Center is just like, you could also be like, and your entire family should run the country forever. Why is this a problem?
So Alex has a studied prediction.
Uh-huh.
And I want to say this. Like, this is why, going back to the past, one of the reasons it's particularly fun for me is because there's so much going on now with Alex trying to be like, I've always been right.
Yeah.
I predicted everything.
Yeah.
And so many people online who want to argue about, like, it turns out Alex Jones was right about everything.
Right again.
Hey, look, I'm just a Joe Rogan bro, but I got to tell you, Alex, when's he been wrong?
He just keeps being right.
Wrong?
Every time he shows up, they only talk about the times when he's right.
And there's so much he's wrong about. This is hilarious.
We're probably actually going to see Hillary in there in 08. Before 08, probably by 06, you're going to see Bill Clinton as Secretary General. He'll then serve a 8-year term there and then run for president here.
Sure.
It's a frightening prospect, but we'll discuss the real political paradigm. I'll give you insightful analysis from my years of study on this subject and my predictions.
So Alex has these predictions that these are shit.
No, they're great. They worked out exactly.
He couldn't have been more wrong about any of that. Hillary lost in the 2008 primary to Obama, and Bill Clinton is not, nor has he ever been, the Secretary General of the UN. Also, there aren't established 8-year terms for UN Secretaries General.
Nope.
Their terms last varying amounts of time over history, but since 1971, it's become tradition that a person's elected to the position for a 5-year term, and they will get a second term unless it's vetoed by a member nation.
Yeah.
This has only happened once since, with Boutros-Ghali not getting a second term in 1996. The next two Secretaries General, Kofi Annan and Ban Ki-moon, serve full 10-year stretches in office. For someone whose big villain in the world is the UN, Alex seems to not have a very good grasp on how they operate.
No clue.
For someone who has years of study to bring this analysis, what?
Also, just on its face, can you imagine the United Nations electing a former United States president as the Secretary General?
We're going to talk about just how unrealistic that is.
That's
a little bit later.
Insanely unrealistic.
I would be very comfortable with saying that we will never see the day.
Ever.
That not only a former president, but a high-level U.S. diplomat will never be Secretary
Ever.
General of the U.N.
They don't want anybody to bomb anybody. You can't have anybody running the U.N. who's like, let's bomb sometimes. No!
There is a lot of distributed power among the Security Council
sure.
and such in terms of the organization of the U.N., but there's really something important about the representation that is given by having different regions of the world represented by the Secretary General.
Absolutely.
And so whenever there is a new appointment coming up, there will generally be conversation of what region of the world is up.
Right.
This time.
Right, right,
And
right.
the United States belongs to a group that has had a lot of times
yeah.
being up. They've had a number of terms in the Secretary Generalship.
Right,
and
right.
so, first of all, you're not going to probably see anybody from the United States, first of all, ever.
Ever.
But then second, you're not going to see it before there's not another person probably from an Asian country.
Totally.
Or from Eastern Europe. There's never been someone from the Eastern European region who's been in the Secretary General position.
Yeah.
So, like, these things are important. And they're important to the countries that do have those veto powers over the process. And, like,
I know somebody in Hungary who's really looking for that Secretary General job.
It's just ridiculous. If you have any awareness at all, and like I said, we'll talk about it in more detail later, but like, if you have any idea about how any of this stuff works, like just on a structural basis, you couldn't possibly think that these were in any way reasonable conspiracies to have.
Absolutely not.
There's just no way they could ever happen.
No, some of the member nations of the UN have been like, we just had the United States invade us. We just had them in here. We can't be having them run the UN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. There's one really big reason why this will never happen. We'll get to a little bit down the road.
Okay.
But you'll notice that these predictions, no matter how bad they are and how wrong they continue to be, they often don't change. In more recent days, we've heard Alex try to reuse this exact same conspiracy, but with Michelle Obama becoming president
yep.
and Barack becoming the Secretary General of the UN. It's all a load of shit, but it's really effective in terms of terrifying the audience. And so Alex can constantly just recycle this stuff with just slightly different details changed to suit the times.
Yeah.
It's all bullshit.
I mean, to a certain extent, if the President of the United States and a former president of the United States was a UN Secretary General at the same time, I think I might believe in the globalists. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, dude, if the president was married to the Secretary General of the UN and they also happened to be a former president,
yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
No.
Like, even if it isn't a conspiracy.
No. Just no.
No.
Whatever's
no.
going on is wrong.
There is a structural problem with the organization
yes.
of what's going on, and we cannot allow it
yeah, yeah,
no
yeah.
matter what.
Yeah, if John F. Kennedy had been like, hey, Robert, you've been doing a great AG job. I'm going to need you to do a SG job at the UN. Mm. Even us would be like, look, no more brothers in politics.
Sure.
No more.
Yeah. and like, let's say people who I have mostly positive feelings towards,
yeah.
Barack Obama
sure.
and Michelle Obama,
sure.
I still would be furious
no.
about that prospect.
No.
But it's laughable. It's,
yes.
It's honestly laughable just based on what things would need to happen in order to get to that point. It's just ridiculous.
Both China and Russia agree. Clinton will be the next Secretary General.
there's like, it's important to understand when you're talking about something that is this conspiracy, like Clinton's going to become the Secretary General of the UN.
Yes, yeah.
You kind of have to discuss how one becomes the Secretary General of the UN. Or at least you have to give me some kind of an idea that you understand it.
Or else
I'm going to say that this is bad analysis.
Yeah.
And that's what Alex seems to pride himself on, that this is real analysis. Listen to this horse shit.
Absolutely. We are the leader in real information, in true analysis. You don't hear the mindless infighting on this show, the conspiracy theories, the issues of little or no significance.
I'm sorry, what?
On some of the other so-called Patriot Talk shows, we certainly cut to the lies of the false left-right paradigm. So go ahead, folks, stay with us and keep up with the Joneses.
Great.
Great.
Flash forward to the present day. Brian Stelter looks weird.
Fucking kill Brian Stelter! His face looks demonic the way his cheeks curl.
You know, you can't smile like that unless you're possessed,
unless you're possessed by the devil. That's the only way to smile like that. And this is why we cut through the false left-right paradigm.
Now, flash forward to a little bit earlier in time. Ah, oh, Glenn Beck, I hate him.
Oh, I hate Glenn Beck. He stole everything from me and we fight all the time.
Everything is fake. I don't get bogged down in the conspiracy theories. Every shooting didn't happen.
Drudge is amazing. Drudge is evil. Drudge is amazing again.
Oh, someone bought him.
Yeah. Okay, right. Whatever.
So Alex has a little bit of a complaint about Bush. And fine.
Yeah.
He claims that he came into the tenure of Bush in office with a position of, like, let's see what happens.
Sure.
But then he was disappointed immediately.
Oh.
And so, you know, I'm saying, okay, let's just see what Bush does. Well, he comes out of the gate and says, I'm going to take over the churches with faith-based initiatives, open borders, and I'm not going to go after Bill Clinton. I'm going to block Dan Burton's committee. I mean, they could have arrested Bill Clinton. This guy was pardoning convicted cocaine dealers and taking money from them. That's illegal. They can pardon them, they just can't take money from them. Taking money from convicted money launderers and arms traffickers. This is all out in the open. Bill Clinton could be behind bars right now, but no.
This is so interesting, the way that which Alex is, he has a consistency in his desire to see his political enemies prosecuted.
Yeah. Yep.
For crimes that he's imagined they've committed that are almost identical to the crimes that his heroes are committing.
I was going
to
say, the crimes that he imagines his enemies committing are ones his allies are committing openly and often.
Yeah, but they're not.
No.
So another problem with Bush, it comes down to the Senate elections.
Okay.
In 2000, when Bush came into office.
Sure.
This really confused me. But I think I figured out what Alex is talking about, but I still am not 100% positive.
George Bush says, you know what? We've got one more vote than the Democrats in the Senate, but we're going to go ahead and give them 50-50. Never happened before. Bush ordered the Republicans, give them 50-50. Then they had Jeffords switch in that staged event to give the Democrats control of the Senate. Now, that was totally staged, folks. They admit it.
So they admit it.
Who?
I don't know.
Who admitted it?
I don't know.
Who admitted that?
And what did they admit?
Why would they admit that?
More importantly, what?
What exactly? They gave them 50-50.
Yes. Bush gave them a seat.
How?
So here's the thing. I'll jump ahead to that.
Okay.
Because that was sort of what I was going to explain last. And I think that what he's getting at is that Bush stopped the recount in Florida.
Oh.
And Florida was a previously Republican-held seat.
Right.
The incumbent had retired.
Right.
And the Democrat ended up winning the election.
Sure, sure.
And I guess maybe Alex thinks that if the recount had gone forward,
right,
that the Republican would have won the seat. But based on the percentages, I don't think that's the case. The Democrat was pretty handily ahead by like 5%.
Yeah. Alex should really be thanking his gourd that they that they stopped that recount.
And his buddy was involved in it.
Yeah, involved in stopping that recount.
Yeah, I think that that's the only way that I can look back and make sense of this.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what he's talking about.
Because they gave, yeah, it would, and he would almost view it probably as like a trade of like
something like
Florida
that.
Got the president, so they got the Senate. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not all Senate elections stick out in your memory, but 2000 was special. That was the election where John Ashcroft lost the Missouri Senate race to Mel Carnahan, who had actually died prior to the election. As someone who was in Missouri at the time, this was gratifying for me because I hated John Ashcroft. The guy's an asshole.
He is a piece of shit.
Yeah. After the 2000 Senate elections, the vote was tied 50-50, with the vice president casting the tie-breaking vote. Then, in June 2001, Jim Jeffords, previously a Republican, decided to go independent, and he started to caucus with the Democrats. In a book he would later release, Jeffords explained that he began to feel alienated by the GOP, particularly in their refusal to support and fund the Individuals with Disabilities Act, which had been a major priority of his for at least, like, decades before this. I'll read to you here from a statement that he released after he decided to switch parties. Quote, "Increasingly, I find myself in disagreement with my party. I understand that many people are more conservative than I am, and they form the Republican Party. Given the changing nature of the National Party, it's become a struggle for our leaders to deal with me and for me to deal with them. Indeed, the party's electoral success has underscored the dilemma I face within my party. In the past, without the presidency, the various wings of the Republican Party in Congress have had some freedom to argue and ultimately to shape the party's agenda. The election of President Bush changed that dramatically. We don't live in a parliamentary system, but it's only natural to expect that people such as myself, who have been honored with positions of leadership, will largely support the president's agenda. Looking ahead, I can see more and more instances where I will disagree with the president on very fundamental issues. The issues of choice, the direction of the judiciary, tax and spending decisions, missile defense, energy and the environment, and a host of other issues large and small. The largest for me is education," which loops back to the Individuals with Disability Act issues that he was very passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
You can make an argument that there was like some backroom dealing involved, because duh. After he switched parties and gave the Democrats a slight advantage in terms of votes, he was given the chairmanship of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, but you could also kind of make the argument that this was making up for the chairmanship that he would necessarily lose if, when he leaves the Republican Party
that he
had held for a long time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. Like, that doesn't feel staged to me. I don't see anyone admitting it, and I don't know what was staged about the ending of the recount. I don't understand how any of that staged or admitted.
No.
But it's interesting. A lot of that stuff's interesting.
Yes.
Ashcroft losing to a dead man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fun whenever we hate somebody so much we'd rather have a dead person in their spot. That's nice.
Oh, also, one more note about that. Ultimately, none of this matters at all, because you remember, like, you know, Mel Carnahan, he died before the 2000 election.
Sure.
His wife Jean filled that seat for 2 years. Then in 2002, there was a special election where she lost to Jim Talent, and the Senate was under GOP control once again.
Yeah.
So Jim Jeffords' defection was a big deal on paper, but ultimately it only mattered for a stretch of months,
yeah,
which are actually in the past by the time Alec is recording the show in 2003, which is strange.
Wow. What a useless piece of shit. that's an interesting way of recasting a certain amount of failure, I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's all staged, man.
No clue.
Look, man, none of these shows that Alec's his competition.
Uh-huh.
Problem is, they don't have substance.
He doesn't have competition because they don't have substance.
Well, great point.
Exactly.
I think that's a better way to put it.
People out there, when you listen to these neocons, they'll make fun of stupid liberals with moron policies and the useful idiot low-level people. They don't talk about real substance. This is totally and completely staged. Remember, Bush is going to sign that assault weapons ban of Clinton's. They're going to reauthorize, and I've read what they're actually saying, folks. It's a lie that, oh, it isn't going to pass.
It didn't happen.
So, I mean, pass.
I almost would rather listen to something that doesn't have substance than something that's pretending to have substance and is drastically wrong.
Yeah. It would be like...
Someone that's convinced it has substance and is convincing you of inaccurate conclusions.
I would rather not have a pie than have a pie that he baked out of paper. You know, with no filling, no nothing. It's just a paper. It's a paper plate. I would rather not have a pie than have somebody give me a paper plate and say, eat this, idiot.
Do I have to eat the paper plate, or can I use it for something else?
No!
Eat it!
See, because I'm taking that paper plate that he's trying to give me, and I'm using it to serve up a nice pie, which is our podcast, metaphorically.
That's a good pie.
In that case, I would love that paper plate.
Ah, well, this is why he makes you eat it in front of him.
Mm. This metaphor has lost...
It's run out.
Yes.
Yes.
So, Clinton totally going to become Secretary General.
Sure.
Alex
sure.
elaborates on this, and here's where we're going to get into, like, this is fucking stupid.
Okay.
And so what you're going to have is Bush elected in 04. You're then going to have Hillary Clinton or some other creature put into power in 08. And long before them, in the next 2 years, Clinton's already lined up most of the G8 countries. She's got six of the eight.
What?
To be Secretary General in the next 2 years. Clinton will serve as Secretary General for 8 to 10 years until Hillary leaves. He will then come back and be president here.
Okay.
So we'll have Bush and Clinton double-teaming us, and then we'll have Hillary Clinton in there while Clinton is a Secretary General. So understand... For the last 2 years, for sure, probably the last 3 to 4, you'll have Bill Clinton as Secretary General when George W. is president.
What?
Then Hillary will come in, and you and Secretary Generals usually serve 8 to 10 years. You will then have Hillary as president with Clinton as Secretary General.
In this episode alone, it's almost impressive how much of a lack of awareness about the UN Alex seems to be displaying. He's been wrong about the way the terms work for Secretaries General, and he's come up with this fun story about Bill Clinton trying to solicit votes to get in office. Alex is wrong about those details, too, though. He said that Clinton needed 8 countries, and he got the approval of 6, but that's not true. A candidate for Secretary General needs to be have the backing of 9 members of the UN Security Council and not have any vetoes from any of the permanent members, who are the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Russia, and China. There are 15 countries in the Security Council at any time, so you'd need to have support of 9 of them and not be someone who would be vetoed. Bill Clinton would absolutely be vetoed either by Russia or China, as
no.
you already brought up, 1,000,000%. It's not even a question. There is no fucking way that would ever happen. Nonsense.
Oh, yes. I, Vladimir Putin, say hello to you, Mr. Clinton. I can't wait to work with you going forward.
It's an unthinkable prospect that Russia or China would not veto a former U.S. president as a candidate for the U.N. Secretary Generalship. It's nonsense.
But Dick Cheney could get through.
Probably not. Alex is basing that 8 countries thing, like he said, off the G8, but that has nothing to do with the UN Security Council or deciding the Secretary General.
No, different thing.
The G8 is a yearly summit that was held among the Group of 8 countries until 2014 when they kicked Russia out and changed their name back to the Group of 7. France, the United States, and United Kingdom are all G8 countries that have a permanent spot on the UN Security Council, so there is a little bit of overlap there.
Sure.
But the Security Council is made up of the 5 permanent members and 10 rotating non-permanent member states representing different regions of the world. In 2003, when Bill Clinton would supposedly be trying to lock down these votes for UN Secretary General positions, there weren't even 6 G8 countries in the Security Council. There were the permanent members, France, the United States, the United Kingdom, and Russia, since they hadn't been kicked out yet.
Sure.
And that year, Germany was a rotating member. That was a G8 country that was in the Security Council.
Cool.
It's only 5 of the G8 countries that would have been even a factor in the decision about the selection of a Secretary General. Canada, Italy, and Japan weren't even in play. Ooh, but maybe Alex is talking about in 2006 when the whole thing would go down, not in 2003.
Right.
Bill Clinton was just trying to plan prematurely, preemptively.
You know, Bush was still in office. There was still time.
This doesn't work either. In 2006, Germany is no longer a rotating member of the Security Council, but Japan would be.
Ooh.
So the numbers actually just be the same. They balance out. It wouldn't
sure.
work.
Sure.
It's really a big problem how little Alex seems to grasp about this stuff that he's talking, making these grand conspiracies about. He's pulling out numbers and making up fun, scary stories for the audience, but it's pretty embarrassing when you consider the reality of how the UN works. Even if a candidate makes it through the selection process in the Security Council, they still need to be approved by the General Assembly afterwards. Though no one has ever been rejected by the General Assembly after being selected by the Security Council,
yeah.
The awareness that certain candidates would be rejected is a critical part of the Security Council selection process and part of why it often ends up dragging on pretty long. There's zero chance that Bill Clinton or any former U.S. president would not be voted down by the General Assembly. It's outrageously stupid.
I am going to tell you this right now. I refuse to take the predictions of someone who purports to be an expert in international affairs who would absolutely be destroyed by any 10-year-old in the Model UN Club.
Definitely.
Just murdered by him.
Yes.
Murdered by a 10-year-old.
Just simple basics.
A 10-year-old would be disappointed to have that conversation with an adult.
Mm-hmm.
It would rattle their entire perception of humanity, and they would learn too young that adults are just bigger children.
Yeah, and how if you're confident and amass yeah. enough false credibility, people will just go along with what you say. Like the notion that if you're in the Security Council and you're discussing like who should we put up for the Secretary Generalship,
sure,
it would be fairly obvious that it might be seen as insulting to the rest of the world to nominate a former U.S. president, and that would probably be a consideration. Like, it would be an affront.
Generally speaking,
it would give the message that the United States has an actual primacy.
Yes, of course,
in the world, and that just is not that's not the message the UN wants to give.
Yes, we are the body that represents a large number of nations who all have some sort of tension between each other in some form or another. So we tend to elect somebody with a neutral, perhaps even a distant kind of view of how to deal with this on a global scale. Or this time, we could elect one of the guys causing all of the tensions all around the world.
I can't imagine that, just Russia and China would never.
Insane.
It would never be like,
insane.
It would be great. Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, yeah.
So dumb.
Yeah, yeah. Obama has a peace prize, and we all want it taken away. We don't want him anywhere near the UN.
Alex is able to confidently assert these things because this space is so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't, like, people who are giving voice to the, that's not how this works.
Sure, sure.
Oh, no, it's magic.
His co-host should be a 10-year-old in the Model UN Club.
Yes.
Yeah.
It would be devastating.
It would be awful.
Yeah. So, Alex goes on a little bit.
You've got to get us out of the UN. You've got to point out that they're giving us two false choices of a liberal New World Order, a conservative New World Order, and point out we don't want a New World Order, period. This has to be done now. You've got to grow up, put your thinking cap on, figure out what's happening, expose who's behind the terror, or they're going to keep using it to destroy your future, to take your pension funds, to wreck this nation.
In the present, Alex is totally fine with a New World Order.
Oh, totally.
As long as it's a Trump New World Order.
He said New World Order.
Yeah.
They love it.
A collection of Christian nationalist states.
Yes.
That all work together.
We have an international coalition of nationalist states who refuse to view international coalitions as being valuable.
Mm-hmm. And we're also going to buy Greenland.
Yes.
We're going to take over...
nationalism, great. Colonialism.
He's really warmed up to New World Order.
New World Orders.
So that Secretary's General thing is fucking with
it's
me.
Really fun, but it's annoying.
Yeah, so Alex has a guest on, and this person is apparently a member of a school board in Akron, Ohio, which is where they were having the discussion about the fingerprints for lunches.
Yeah.
Which, again, one of the large arguments for is it's a bureaucratic nightmare. You need some sort of an organization. It's a large city school.
Sure.
Also, there are a high number of students who are on assistance programs.
Yep.
And to take away the stigma that students feel.
Sure.
Reduce bullying. This way, you wouldn't have to have a ticket that singles you out as a. Right. Anyway, Alex wants her to. It's a boring interview, but
sure.
Alex wants her to say that it's mandated.
Right.
That the government, the federal government is making them do this.
Right.
And she doesn't because it's not.
Oh.
So the federal government did mandate this.
Well, they mandate it the way the feds mandate a lot of things by saying you can have this money, however, you can only spend this money in this way. So while they don't tell you exactly what, you're limited on what kind of scanner system you can use. Well,
Mary, if I was on in Akron on the AM or FM dial, I could stop this. Well, the big conglomerates are buying everything up and buying any station we get on, but...
Yeah, so they're not mandating it. It's a grant.
Yeah. So it's like, okay. So it's like somebody's giving you $100
yeah.
for you to buy this thing, right, that they that you need, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And you can't just go spend it on drugs.
It's tough.
It's bullshit.
Yeah.
It's the federal government telling me what to do with their money, and I hate it.
You want some fun trivia?
What?
This woman that Alex is interviewing is the mother of Patrick Carney, the drummer from the Black Keys.
Well, that is fun trivia.
Yes.
That is very fun trivia.
Yep.
I wonder how he feels about that.
It has legitimately nothing to do with this interview, but I was so bored that I was like, who is this person? Can I find out anything about them? And
it
turns out she's the Black Keys drummer's mother. And in the process of looking at that, I realized that the Black Keys drummer, Patrick Carney, is married to one of my favorite singer-songwriters, Michelle Branch.
Really?
So this is the,
I did not know that.
This is the mother-in-law of Michelle Branch.
This is a small world, Dan.
Crazy.
It's a small world. Everybody has love and will travel.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So they are talking a little bit more, and this is the only other thing I really think was all that interesting. And it's, I think Alex thinks the solution to school shootings and what have you is beaten up kids.
Sure.
You know,
I know that when I was in school, if I smarted off, they'd take me down and give me 3 pops. They'd make me run around the track till I threw up. But you can't do that anymore, so the kids, instead, are spoiled brats and come in with a gun and shoot people.
Right, and then you have parents that you know, they come in and they think their job is to be their kid's best friend, and they take the child's part in this. I mean, you know, parents are ruining their children because they're uncomfortable with being parents. It's sad. Well,
I know this. I want schools where they pop you. I want schools where they run you around the track till you throw up if you're bad. And we had better schools at that point.
Oof, man. I don't know if I have much of a comment for that, but that's kind of sad.
Hey, you know, if you don't want bad things to happen, you should psychologically and physically torture your kids. I don't know why everybody doesn't get this.
Yeah.
You know, you physically and psychologically torture children into behaving good as adults. And then later on, when they're adults, they'll torture children into behaving good as an adult. And now we have our perfect system of all of those people. Can't we see that, Dan?
I think that it makes a lot of sense that you should give carte blanche to people who are in an educational capacity
totally.
To enact violence on children.
I want a stranger to beat my children.
I want them to determine what is and is not appropriate behavior and then respond with violence.
Yep. In fact, you know what? As a parent, I want less say over how my kids are beaten.
And I would also like some of that violence to be torturous.
Oh, absolutely.
Like run until you vomit.
Oh, and if you have a paddle, you better innovate a way to make it hit harder. Because if you don't, what's the point?
Yeah. I don't like this position.
No.
Anyway, Alex, after talking to this guest, the mother of the Black Keys drummer, he goes to calls.
I listen to a Christian station in the evening here locally in the Chicago area, and there I forgot the gentleman's name. I had it written down at home, and I left for work this morning. I forgot it, but I know the name of his video. It's called Monopoly Men. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes.
What do you think of it?
That's pretty good.
I don't think Alex has seen it.
No clue.
Those sort of responses always are like, I don't know.
It's all right.
Monopoly Men wasn't an actual documentary. It was the title of an episode of a conspiracy show called Phenomenon. The series was hosted by Dean Stockwell, and this one had to do with the theories surrounding the Federal Reserve.
Sure.
It's pretty amazing to go back and look at this episode and see who they chose to talk to. Here are some of the experts that they consulted.
All right. Here we go. Give me a Paul. Give me a Ron or a Wayne. No Pauls?
I didn't see them in the mix.
Damn it.
Andrew Arnold was interviewed, who is an editor for The Spotlight, which is that anti-Semitic rag published by Willis Cardo.
That's the one.
They talked to Big Jim Tucker, who's the editor-in-chief of The Spotlight.
You're not going to not talk to Big Jim.
Which is that anti-Semitic rag published by Willis Cardo. Oh, and they also talked to William Still, whose film The Money Masters contains historical inaccuracies about the Rothschild family that have their roots in historical anti-Semitic propaganda, most notably the Nazi film The Rothschild Share at Waterloo. Clearly, this is the kind of hard-hitting TV episode that does their homework on the possible crypto beliefs that their supposed experts might be secretly pushing. Ooh, bad job, Dean Stockwell.
Yeah, it really bums me out, because here's what they could just do. I'm tired of all the content they produce. just every couple of weeks put out another video of somebody straight ahead, like in a hostage situation, just going, eh, the Jews did it. And then we all got it. That's what they all say. It's the same documentary a million times over.
Well, they would never do that because you can't really persuade people with that. You have to couch your beliefs in these crypto talking points,
sure,
which is essentially what this this documentary about the Federal Reserve,
you know,
boils down to. And you can kind of tell by the guest selection that, I mean, I don't know if the people who are making this documentary series had a vested interest in really giving the spotlight their an unchallenged position.
Hey,
but it seems like it was at least negligent.
Yeah,
just. Oh, fucking straight up.
Hey, let's just get some Nazis in here. Come
straight
on.
Up.
What, are we not going to have Nazis on this documentary about the Federal Reserve?
Very silly.
Yeah.
So Alex talks to a guy named Frank Dorrell. He's okay. Another guest.
All right.
And this is a guy who's like an anti-war activist and doesn't seem too bad. Kind of just seems like he might not know who Alex is entirely.
Right.
Might have some questions about 9/11 himself.
Sure.
Who knows?
Sure.
And you can see Alex, there's a really fascinating thing that happens here. Whenever Alex tries to relate to somebody who he doesn't actually relate to,
right,
it goes off track so fast.
It's kind of controlling the paradigm, and still I understand what you're saying, but does your film expose that this stuff goes on in Democrat administrations as well?
Oh, definitely.
All
it's,
right.
You know, it's the
We're
Democrats
above the
in power just as much during all these wars as the Republicans.
Yeah, because if we don't point that out, we don't go anywhere. It just
oh no, believe me, we're not. I am not a Democrat. I used to be. I used to be some years ago.
Just like I used to be a Republican. It's just
uh-huh.
You learn, you live.
Well,
you
Ramsey Park says it on the tape, and Noam Chomsky says the same thing that we don't. There aren't two parties. There's only one party, the business party, the military business party.
But I wouldn't even see. You know, you say USA did all this, or you say the business party, corporate America. It isn't corporate America. It's organized crime, Jolly Roger, piracy. They operate as crime syndicates. They don't operate as businesses. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we're saying the same thing with different terminology.
I know, but then all I see is the low-level left galvanizes a battering ram against the middle class. You know, take the environmentalists. They're busy out grabbing farms and ranches. And they're funded by the big corporations that are getting the land after this happens, but then nothing's happening with Texas company Proteogene putting AIDS virus in corn supplies. Did you know about that?
Mm.
It's Associated Press. Well, yeah, it was a pharmacological corn test. Why isn't the left worried about that?
I can't speak for everybody, Alex.
Yeah, that was weird, that exchange.
Huh.
So Frank Dorrell's a longtime anti-war activist who made a film called What I've Learned About U.S. Foreign Policy, The War Against the Third World, which was released in 2000. It's not really an original documentary since a lot of it is just clips of speeches by Martin Luther King Jr., Jimmy Carter, and Amy Goodman.
Sure.
And there's even a 20-minute section in it that's just clips from a different documentary about the Iran-Contra affair.
Oh, of course.
It seems like Frank is a mostly level-headed anti-war fellow who seems like to think that he's talking to the same sort of person, just like they have a few different political ideas. I, what happened there is what I see happen when Alex tries to find this common ground.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is the common ground is established in that they believe that the problem of militarism is not unique to the left or the right. And then immediately Alex will start ranting about some other bizarre talking point that has nothing to do with what's being discussed, like HIV and the corn.
There you go.
This is a complete curveball, and it's meant to disorient Frank, or at least put him in a sort of defensive posture. Even in situations where Alex is trying to present agreement with somebody who's ostensibly on the left, still needs to assert dominance. And honestly, it comes off really weak and confusing.
Yeah, and there's always the moment where the person gets it. You know, that is when he just went, oh, no, I am on with a lunatic. I'm fucked.
Or maybe at least just start to get worried about it.
Yeah.
And, this interview is fine because Alex backs off on that a little bit and they just sort of talk about war sucking. And
sure, war sucks.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree.
So Alex ends this interview and he's concerned about border towns.
The devil?
No.
Ah.
Well,
whoop.
The devil may come up.
Eh?
You let your college kids, even your high school kids, go over the border into this area, and they are being sacrificed by satanic cults. Now, that's admitted.
Ah.
And they mention that here in the article. So what do you think about this? I mean, how bizarre is this that these drug dealers, who sell their drugs predominantly to the CIA, are Satanists? Now, I know that sounds crazy, but it's the fact.
So there's a couple issues here.
I like the idea of being an anti-war activist, and all of a sudden he's like, you know, kids are being sacrificed to satanic cults, huh? What do you think about that?
I think I took the wrong booking. So in terms of my idea about figuring out if Alex thinks he's fighting the literal devil,
yes.
This still doesn't help.
No, it
because
doesn't.
Because a satanic cult could be misdirected.
Exactly.
They could be worshiping a god that doesn't exist.
Right.
And for Alex, in the present day, we know he believes hoof...
Oh yeah,
pitchfork,
literal Christian devil on your shoulder, telling
yes.
you when to do evil,
and
yes.
getting into people's heads and making them morph into faces that go blah.
Of
at
course,
Alex.
Revealing himself to certain people and letting them in on his plan.
Sure,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
This still is like I could see somebody being like, look. I'm fighting a satanic cult. I don't believe what they believe.
Right,
but
right.
Look what they're doing.
Right.
You could still have that.
No, and there's tons of people still on the right who do recognize that the Church of Satan is not actually worshiping
sure.
their literal Christian devil.
Right. So
many of them disagree with that, but
this doesn't do it for me in terms of that open question.
Right.
Now, I will say that I've been to Juarez. And I did not get sacrificed to...
Not once?
No.
Not even one time?
Uh-uh.
Not even a little bit?
No.
Didn't take a toenail?
No. Nope.
Okay.
I had some of that corn.
Oh, no.
It was good.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The street vendor had some corn.
Oh, that's good.
Had some spice on it.
Ooh.
It was real good.
Little Mexican street corn?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good
Fantastic.
Stuff.
Fantastic.
That's great stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
Are
anyway,
okay.
I guess people are being sacrificed to the devil.
Ah, damn.
So Alex has been wrong about a number of things, and he continues to be wrong about something that we mentioned earlier is a ongoing theme.
Iraq mass murder, freed and mixed up. Yeah, sure. The Baathists are all CIA folks, and that's who they're putting into power now, the Baathists. Same people who ran Saddam's regime. The U.S. has admitted it accidentally released a former Iraqi official accused of being involved in the murder of thousands of Shiites. They say it's an accident.
So Alex is still, as of May 30th, convinced that the Ba'ath Party is being put in power. No
yeah.
change in that status quo.
Yeah.
He is still looking to make that... Or I don't know if he's even looking to it, but it's still... if there's a pivot, it's in the future.
Yeah.
This is weird.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you... That's a weird thing to... That's a weird hill to die on, you know? Like... Because you don't have any vested interest. There's no real part of the conspiracy that requires them to put the Ba'ath Party in there.
Mm.
You could just say that the CIA took over the other people because they were all CIA.
I imagine that might be the direction he
yeah.
goes eventually.
Yeah, it's not hard to... But why would you fight against the grain on that one?
The idea of still having a conspiracy, it seems salvageable.
Sure.
Because you can just say, this person also CIA, like
yeah.
you said. But yeah, this abject denial of something that is going on and is a major
yeah.
issue is strange.
Yeah, and the idea that your audience is going to have an interesting view of the differences between Sunni and Shiite is maybe a little silly.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
So there's one thing that you can do generally, and it's not quite, I don't know if it quite applies to the Ba'ath Party narrative, but in terms of Saddam, if you look at the way Alex is discussing the situation here, he's laid a perfect track in front of him where, like, no matter what happens, he can try and pretend he's right.
Also, no bunker where U.S. bombs targeted Saddam. Turns out our government knew. Reuters is reporting that nothing was there. It was totally staged to claim they'd killed Saddam when they'd already flown the guy out from Tikrit under military escort to Russia.
Oh, he's in Russia now.
They're never going to catch Saddam. If we complain a lot, what they will do is they will grab one of his doubles and then try that guy.
Yeah. So now we have two
Always
possible
right.
situations where we find Saddam or we don't.
Right.
If we don't, Alex is right. They never would find him. And
exactly.
if they do find him, then it's just a double.
It's just
a
double.
Yeah. So you've created a situation where no matter what, you have track. We can pretend to be right. It's a very lazy strategy.
Yeah, I think the only one that you really probably couldn't fuck with just yet is that Saddam actually died in 1994, and it's been one of his doubles the whole time.
Well, I don't know how big a part of the show Steve is in 2003. So that narrative has not been brought up yet.
Oh, bummer.
So Alex has a story here. It's about how there's death camps being announced in America,
sure,
which is not the case.
Right.
This is going back to a headline from we talked about on a previous episode where there was discussion about the possibility of military tribunals that would lead to execution of prisoners
in places
like Guantanamo.
Right.
And Alex is relating that and turning it into a thing where it's like, well, that's going to be in Omaha or whatever.
Sure.
You know? And so he's got that. And look how smoothly he turns this into a plug.
Monday, U.S. announces death camps. I'll dig that article out and cover it next hour. You can't just cover something like that on Monday and leave it alone. Got to recap the week. They say it's a death camp. They say it's for, quote, terrorists, but the definition of terrorism is anything. And they admit they're building these camps. And that's mainstream news. And it's in my new film, Police State 3 Total Enslavement. They have a large 20-minute segment of the 2-hour and 37-minute film. A large 20-minute segment of a film is about the camps, all mainstream news articles and bills and public officials speaking out. So you need to get Police State 3 Total Enslavement. You need to get it. You need to make copies. You need to get it out to everybody in your area and tell everybody. A lot of corporations now are sharing a list of websites they're blocking. Mine's one of them. So turn the heat up. Tell 50 people a day via email about InfoWars.com, about PrisonPlanet.com. Get involved in the guerrilla information war.
Yeah, so it's a plug, but it's a plug for free publicity. Yeah. It's a plug for street teaming.
Yeah, remember when we used to remember in the early days when I used to be like, oh man, I didn't see that plug coming.
Mm-hmm.
That was back whenever he used to be able to do that kind of stuff.
There was a little bit of a natural organic thought that happened that went from A to B as opposed to A to M.
It didn't go from murder to buy pills. You know, it was a little bit different then.
There's at least connective tissue between, like, here is something bad. Here is my plea that you watch my documentary about something bad.
Right.
And serve as free advertising for it to everybody.
Yeah. Tell everybody.
Yeah. It kind of makes sense. But it's still, like, pretty transparent.
Egregious. You know what? And I like a good 95 to 120-minute movie. That's about as long as they should be. 187 minutes for that shit? For a third sequel? Oof. No, definitely not.
I like, too, the way that this is, like, also everything is just the same as ever. Like, we have this UN conspiracy where it's Bill and Hillary as opposed to Michelle and Barack.
Yep.
We have this, you know, the death camps and what have you. And also, I'm being shadow banned on the internet.
Yes, of course.
You got to send it out in your emails because you were being shadow banned in 2003. Amazing that he was able to, like, reach the levels of success with people blocking him in 2003.
All the way back then.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, cancel culture was out of control. There was no way to grow into a massive international, like, monster town.
For some sort of context, like, at one point in this episode, Alex mentions that he's on in 30 states in the country. He's not even on in 20 states.
There's just no way to grow a business anymore if you're a white man. It's just, you can't do it.
And you're shadow banned.
Yeah.
And here's another thing that never changes. Everything's always the same.
No, to answer your question before you've asked it yet, I haven't got the city to pass the resolution yet, the Liberty Preservation Resolution, but I did speak with the mayor the other day at the Memorial Day Parade. I wanted to touch base with you on that.
For those who don't know what the Liberty Resolution is, some cities have passed minor parts of it. Hundreds of others have passed other resolutions reaffirming the Bill of Rights and saying, no, you can't arrest citizens secretly and blow their heads off.
You do this all the time. In 2009, there's the big initiative to push the 10th Amendment resolutions.
Yep.
Just constantly trying to be like, hey, we still believe in this thing that's the law.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep. It's
Everybody's bound by it.
It's nice that we've always been hated by monsters, but what's especially nice to know is that they're also very, very lazy and just say the same things for years.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting the way that there are those, like, it's like a band. It's like Boston will always play More Than a Feeling.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You have to. And Alex will always have some of these things that are just like, they're the hits.
Yep. Yeah. Just
being
people,
censored. That's a hit.
You know, it is. It is like people listening to the same song on the radio over and over and over again. It's just like, yeah, give me that hate. Give me that pure hate. Just give it to me. I can't get that from Boston. I can listen to FM, but they don't make me hate stuff. You really give me that freedom to want to kill my neighbor.
And the other thing, too, like that's really, really weird here is that, like, so this notion that he wants to constantly be passing resolutions to affirm the Bill of Rights is it's such a trap. It's so duplicitous because it's like, okay, first of all, it's a waste of time.
Oh,
you're wasting everybody's time. Yep. And now when people are just like, just fed up with it. Like, we did this a couple of years ago. Why are we doing this again? You're like, oh, you don't like the Bill of Rights.
Exactly.
It's just, it's such a stupid game. Yeah. And you can see him constantly playing it.
Yeah.
It's, oh, God, it's annoying.
The worst part is, even if it doesn't go anywhere, the waste of time is also a win for them. Just wasting our time is a win because it's time not spent, I don't know, improving anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, hey, let's fix roads or something. It's just, no, we got to spend 3 days in session saying, I think the Bill of Rights is good. Uh-huh. We're already there.
Yep. So Alex has another guest. This is a pretty guest-filled episode.
This is a pretty guest-filled episode.
This is a person named Jan Furman, who's a Belgian lawyer. And I don't know. I think I'm more or less okay with Jan, too. Like, he seems all right.
Yeah.
Might have a little bit of a... it's hard to tell if there is a politeness or an inclination towards conspiracy in him. It's kind of tough to tell, and I couldn't quite read it.
Okay.
I couldn't quite read exactly how the dynamic was. But, you know, you have this person who's a lawyer in Belgium who's part of bringing these charges against U.S. military forces who have shot at civilians.
Sure,
Belgian court in order to try and get these things addressed.
Right.
And then you have the anti-war activist guy who made a documentary that's just a bunch of clips of things.
Yeah.
I don't totally hate him. The lady from the Akron School Board, I think, is wrong, and I think the issue is meaningless, but
the Black Keys are great.
She's the mother of one of the guys in the Black Keys. So it's an interesting set of guests.
Yeah, when nobody knew who he was, you could really get a diverse series of people to come on your show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
But we talked about this a little bit because I mentioned on a previous episode that one of the people who was going to be a witness in this case in Belgium was on the show. And so now this lawyer is on to talk about that. So here's a little clip of that.
We filed a complaint on behalf of 17 Iraqis and 2 Jordanians, as you probably know. Through recent amendment of the law, the Belgian government has the possibility now to decide to pass over the file to the U.S., which they say they intend to do, but there's no formal decision yet. And, of course, we will fight that decision because it's very clear that Iraqi civilian victims cannot get a fair trial before a U.S. military court.
Yeah, no shit.
That would have to go into war crimes committed by U.S. troops in Iraq, and more especially by the supreme command of those troops.
So this is all good and well, and I fully support Iraqi civilians having their day in court and being given a voice. I just have a bit of a problem accepting that Alex can credibly have this conversation, because I'm not sure what his solution could possibly be. This gentleman is pretty clearly expressing the problem with expecting countries to hold themselves responsible for the atrocities that they commit, particularly during wartime.
Yeah, why would they want to do that? It would make them do less war.
How could these Iraqi civilians ever get a fair hearing in a U.S. military tribunal? This is where having international bodies can really shine. But Alex's worldview is diametrically opposed to any kind of infringement on the sovereignty of the United States. While preserving a hardline version of state sovereignty, there's absolutely no safeguard against a state acting however they want, provided they have the might to back up those actions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Alex can say, like, well, we just shouldn't all you want, but that's not a good way to organize things.
No. No, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
I just look at how every self-regulated industry in the United States works. Very unregulated.
Yeah, and you know, what it, like every monstrous or every country that's acting monstrously is not going to check themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Turkey still won't admit to a lot of shit.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be like, hey, look, the genocide never happened, but we will discipline the people who definitely didn't commit that genocide.
Checks and balances don't work when you're doing all of it yourself.
No.
It's just not.
Why would you check and balance yourself?
And that's why this conversation with this guy doesn't make sense to me, because what he's saying makes sense.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate on some level Alex's willingness to have this guy on.
Sure.
I certainly don't think he's the only person who would be willing to. I'm sure people like Amy Goodman.
Sure. Yeah.
Would, and maybe it would be a less stupid conversation. But I just don't see how he could possibly have a solution to this problem that doesn't involve some amount of global government.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just no way, like, what military is going to be like, hey, we are going to, like, they don't do it. They don't limit their options for murder. That's just how they work. And even when they say they do, that doesn't mean they fucking do.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Damn it.
So, again, like I'm saying, I'm sure someone like Democracy Now! Would have a conversation with somebody like this.
Yeah.
Or there are other options, but I'm sure something like the Majority Report would talk to a person who has this kind of position or had it existed at the time.
Sure.
But somebody like Amy Goodman wouldn't talk like this.
Last thing I had, Alex Jones, did you know the people that download music and stuff off these music shares?
Yeah, you will be considered a terrorist, life in prison, or secret execution.
I heard a little bit about that.
You'd never hear that kind of nonsense. They wouldn't be talking about Bill Clinton becoming the Secretary General of the UN and then becoming president again, and if you go on Napster, you're going to get executed or have life in a fucking hard labor camp. Ridiculous.
Oh, man.
Stupid.
I think he really took those, you wouldn't steal a car, would you, commercials a little bit too seriously.
Do you remember that, like, whenever, like, movie piracy was kind of, like, a real
so
big,
good.
And so, like, they'd have those commercials that would play before a movie.
That's
where
what
it'd be,
I'm
like,
talking
Ben
about.
Affleck, and he'd be like, come on.
Yeah. Hey, guys, you need to support the industry. You can't be taking stuff.
Yeah.
I don't remember him saying, or we'll kill you.
Yeah. Or you're going to a labor camp.
Hey, look, we understand it's difficult. It's a lot easier to pirate movies. Maybe there's some distribution issues that we can fix.
Yeah.
But don't do it. It's an industry that could die without your support. And if you don't support it, you will die.
Well, it's these sorts of things that make it really difficult to take seriously the actual things that Alex is talking about,
yeah.
Like interviewing this Belgian who's trying to advocate for civilians caught in a war zone.
Yeah.
Like, it's tough to see this as a worthwhile, even the things that are valid, they're a worthwhile use of time, because I guess if you're the sort of person who thinks that you're going to be killed for using Napster, then I don't know what you can bring to the conversation about this Belgian case.
Right. Well, I mean, and not just that, by elevating the stakes of a Napster download, you're like, oh no, human trafficking is a huge problem and all of this shit, and you're like, yeah, but the stakes are the same as pirating from Napster, man. Like, you're devaluing other problems by making just a fucking torrent a death sentence crime.
Yeah,
you know,
and you kind of make a farce out of just about everything. Yeah,
everything.
So Alex gets another call from a guy, and this was weird. I didn't know what to make of this.
Okay,
there's something very positive that's coming out within about 23 days. As of today, will be 23 days. There's going to be an ad that's going to be run in the 12 major newspapers, and this ad is basically being ran by FromTheWilderness.com. Which is a website that does very similar to what you do.
Yeah, I know who it is.
Oh, okay. So you probably know about what I'm talking about then. That's, you know, it's a great thing. So far, I was looking at the website this morning. They need $100,000 to raise.
Sir, I don't support that organization. I'm not going to say anything about it. I'm just not going to talk about it.
Okay. Well,
I'm not going to sit here and talk about people. I just don't support it.
Oh, okay.
Not on my show.
Whoa.
Not on my show.
What is this?
I hate the fucker from wilderness.com. That's what he did. That's what he just said. I hate that fucker.
I was confused. So I went to check out the wilderness.com. I went back in the Wayback Machine to make sure it wasn't something different in 2003.
Sure.
It's just like a survivalist store online. They sell like gun parts and things that you might need for the outdoors.
Yeah.
And the only thing that really stuck out to me is that they very prominently support the NRA. And I think that that might be Alex's bone with this person.
You think so?
Maybe they got into a fight. Because in 2003, Alex hates the NRA.
Yeah.
He thinks that
they're
gun grabbers.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. He only likes more extreme gun organizations
in
2003. And other than that, I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's personal. Like, maybe it has to be something personal between the person who runs that site and Alex.
Yeah.
Or it's about his support of the NRA, whereas Alex prefers Gun Owners of America and Jews for the Preservation of Firearm Rights.
Yeah, but the way he said, I'm not going to talk about people, though, that says it's personal to me.
Yeah,
that
but it still could go back to the NRA thing.
Sure,
that could be the root of their personal issue.
True, true. They could have gotten into an argument about that.
Yeah.
And then it spiraled out of control. I can't imagine why. I mean, you would need some sort of anger... some sort of man who can't control his impulses to elevate an argument about the NRA into a friendship-ending nightmare, right?
You know what, though? Still, it's indicative of a level of control that you don't see from Alex in the present
That's
day.
That's fair.
I'm not going to talk about this. Not on my show, man.
I don't want to talk about people. It's not something we hear today.
Brian Stelter looks weird. Yeah, it's strange. Restraint.
Yeah.
So we have one last clip here, and one of the things I've noticed going back on these 2003 episodes is that I think that Alex views his job. Mm-hmm. Here's how it works.
Okay.
Headlines for a couple minutes up front.
Sure.
Just reading headlines like a newsreader.
Yeah.
Couple minutes at the end of the show. 3 hours in, read some more headlines. Fill the rest of the time however the fuck you want.
It's about how you open and how you close.
Yes.
The middle part is less important as long as you close strong and you open strong.
As pretending to be a news reader, hitting the news, you're like, I am a journalist. I am taking care of business.
Yep.
And then in the middle, you can take whatever calls you want, talk to the drummer from the Black Keys' mom. You just do whatever.
Hey, in an hour set, usually you can only take about 20 minutes off in the middle. But if you're doing InfoWars, you can take about 2 hour and 45 off. I think that'd be fine.
I can kind of enjoy that, but I have noticed that like it seems very intentional.
Oh, interesting.
Now, this is one of the news stories that Alex decides to hit at the end of the show.
Okay.
And it takes an interesting turn.
Interesting.
Please spread the word about the show. We have a long track record. We're here. We tell the truth. We don't get involved in infighting. We don't get involved in mindless garbage or conspiracy theories. We analyze the globalists, their own policy reports, what they're doing, expose the left-right paradigm. Because if you only expose one side of their system, one rail that this train rolls on, you only help the globalists. Gold reaches 15-week high as dollar slips. Financial Times. Gold reveled in the misfortune of the dollar yesterday, reaching $374.40 per troy ounce, its highest in 15 weeks. The precious metal has benefited from its inverse relationship with the dollar, whose appreciation has sent prices up by $55 since the start of April. Some analysts believe gold is set to rise further, driven not by the dollar's weakness, but by demand from Asia following a plan by Chinese government to allow individuals to trade gold. Gold has come into its own, and we are trying to see it going up faster this time. When it was 320, it was a buying opportunity, but now demand is coming from Asia, said Ian Williams at Der Launcher. And it goes on. There will be a massive increase in demand as China is allowing its citizens to invest in gold. It's a means of recycling the trade surplus, keeping upward pressure off their currency. So what happens is they're dumping fiat dollars and buying gold. The commies tell their people to do it, but not here. Oh, it's bad. It's don't buy gold. You ought to be in gold 5% or something. I know I am. I mean, you're just nuts if you don't. I'm in gold about 20%. It goes on and on and on with this vital news.
That's not a news story.
No.
That's a gold plug.
Yeah.
Disguised as a news story.
Yep.
And it's deeply unethical for Alex to not at any point declare that he is syndicated by Ted Anderson, who owns Midas Resources.
Yeah.
Because at this point, he is. He is 100% affiliated with Genesis Communications Network. And that kind of a protracted thing where, you know, you're talking about gold news and you should be in gold 5%. You're crazy if you're not. Like, that's financial advice. That's a commercial for gold that is being masqueraded as a news story. That's fucked up.
That's a commercial in 2003 that gets you a little pat on the head from Ted Anderson, and Bob Chapman's ears start to get a little bit hot, and they're like, oh, I might have a job soon.
Right, because you know what? On the show, Alex isn't talking about Midas Resources, but guess what? There's fucking commercials that Midas Resources puts in for themselves on the stream.
Yep.
So, like, if you are Alex and you're talking about how everybody should be in gold, and you have people who are listening to the show, they will hear the commercials for Genesis Communications, and they'll put two and two together. It's as good as a commercial for Midas at the end of this.
Yeah.
And I just think, I think it's sleazy.
InfoWars was ahead of the game on Hidden SpawnCon. You know, it took a while to trickle up to the New York fucking Times, but we got there.
Alex needs to hashtag this shit.
In some ways, Alex was right about the future, but he made it worse.
So we you know, if you look at this, you got a pretty interesting bit of dynamics.
Yeah.
First, you have the debathification still not being a real thing to Alex, which I find bizarre. You have the devil question still being a bit open.
It's a little bit open.
But you have these dumb predictions about stuff. Like, I just, it's very gratifying to me when you live in a time when everyone's trying to sanitize and hero worship Alex's past beliefs.
Yeah.
You just go back and you glimpse an episode where he has no idea how the UN Secretary Generalship works. He makes completely stupid predictions about the political dynamics and paradigm that are going to evolve. I guess he was right about one thing. That was that Bush got reelected in 2004.
That's true. That is true. He was right about that. That is true.
Good on him there. it's just embarrassing. This is just a sad, sad display.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you listen to Clinton. Like, that's the thing that does get to me. Like, that Clinton being like, you should come back, maybe we shouldn't have those term limits, it's just like, I hate those people so much. We already have the Clintons around every fucking corner in the conspiracy world since they showed the fuck up in Arkansas.
Right.
Like, I've always had the Clintons in my life causing problems. I'm tired of them.
I understand.
Make them
that.
Go away.
I understand that, but if you are Bill Clinton and you're giving a speech at the John F. Kennedy Library, a notably young president, and maybe you do actually have a sincere belief that organizing the political system could be done better if someone were able to come back to office later, why should you have to not say that just because conspiracy theorists will be weird about it?
I'm not saying they should not have to say. I'm saying that they should be gone. Just go into an island forever. Epstein's got one open. You guys have already been there.
Anyway, we'll be back. but we have a website.
We do have a website. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Facebook.
We are on Facebook and Twitter.
Yep.
It's @knowledge_fight and @GoToBedJordan.
Yep.
And if we're on iTunes and download, if you could please find a local charity or mail fund in your area.
We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm Daryl Rundus.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.